Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Cavanaugh. And I want to thank everyone for allowing a dermatologist to crash your rheumatology party here. I remember when I started in this field, I had to actually do a lot of sort of public education about what is psoriasis. But as you know, in the last 15 years, there has been a barrage of different therapies in psoriasis. In fact, when patients come to my clinic now, I have to tell them that some of them do not have psoriasis. So in the world where everyone thinks they have psoriasis, and now they think they have atopic dermatitis, I think it's very exciting we have all these various therapies. How many of you came in last night? Okay, so majority of you. And so you'll notice, you know, it was rainy last night. And those of you who came in this morning, you probably saw the overcast weather. I did want to point out one silver lining in all of this is that the UV index is a little bit lower because of that. So your skin is very thankful for that. All right, so I'm given the task of talking about choosing systemic therapies for psoriatic disease, and I thought Dr. Ogdi did such an eloquent job in terms of outlining some of the guidelines. I think two of our talks will be very synergistic with one another. Here are my disclosures. And so today I'm going to talk about the choice of biologic agents in patients with psoriasis, with or without psoriatic arthritis, and we're also going to think about the consideration of targeted oral therapies in this population. So when we think about choosing a systemic therapy, we are almost overwhelmed with the different choices that we have for our patients with psoriatic disease. And when we think about this, you know, this analogy is using the donuts, but following this morning's talks, I think you're probably thinking about different varietals of broccolis right now. And so when we think about this, oftentimes when I talk to my dermatology colleagues, our question is, when you take a look at a patient who present with psoriasis, what is the first step when we determine therapy with regards to patients presenting with psoriasis? Is it, for example, A, assessing body surface area of the patient with psoriasis, or B, whether the patient may have psoriatic arthritis? And as a dermatologist, and I would say, you know, on behalf of my colleagues as well, in the realm of psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis and psoriatic disease, we actually know where our pecking order is. And that is, when we think about the overall treatment of patients with plaque psoriasis, the first question that we actually ask is there active psoriatic arthritis? And if there is, then we are actually reverting, we're going for systemic therapies that can address the joints. So if you may have a patient who may have, for example, 0.5% body surface area of psoriasis, but if they have active psoriatic arthritis, our choice of therapy would be really considering the biologics and the oral medications. And then if they do not have psoriatic arthritis present, then we look at their skin in terms of the amount of involvement, then determine whether they should get topical therapies or targeted phototherapy versus systemic therapies. So I know that Dr. Ogdi nicely laid out the different domains that we want to think about with regards to psoriatic arthritis. And I think from a dermatologist perspective who, you know, treats patients with psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, oftentimes the main question is, if I have a patient with psoriasis, they may present with peripheral psoriatic arthritis or axial psoriatic arthritis. How do I approach this? So I think about these three bubbles all the time, and I'll kind of tell you about a little bit about this. So this is the FDA-approved biologics for psoriasis. As you can see, there are 12 of these now. And pretty much nearly all of them are approved for psoriatic arthritis, with the exception of brodalumab and bimekizumab in our IL-17 category. Brodalumab is also approved for psoriatic arthritis outside of the U.S. And then for tildrakizumab is only approved for psoriasis as well. And here are the different categories of psoriatic arthritis pharmacotherapy options. And what I wanted to point out, as you communicate with your derm colleagues, you'll see some of them are very familiar with the therapies we share, but others may not be. And the ones that we don't use in dermatology as often in terms of in our psoriatic psoriasis patients include the ones that I that I striked out. So you have, for example, we typically don't use sulfasalazine or leflunomide. And when we think about the biologic DMARDs, we also don't use golimumab or abatacept. And in terms of the targeted synthetic DMARDs, what we typically, we do not use tofacitinib or upadacitinib for skin disease alone. So I think understanding when you're communicating with derm colleagues, understanding their familiarity with the different medications can be very helpful. But the takeaway from this is actually there are a lot of crossover between the management of psoriasis and the management of psoriatic arthritis. Okay, so our polling question will have to do with this particular patient. So let's take a look at this patient. This patient has very classic plaque psoriasis. This is a patient that I saw in LA County and has about overall BSA of around 11%, PASI of 16, PGA of 4, no active PSA that we can assess. And so let's take a look at, so pretend that you're a dermatologist here. And how would you approach this patient who has moderate to severe plaque psoriasis but no PSA? So I think I will. All right, I think we're almost approaching. Okay, wonderful. So let's see here. The number just keeps climbing. Okay, all right, so let's take a look at the results. So as you can see, there's a split in terms of the responses. The most popular answer is adalimumab, and I think adalimumab is a fine choice. Ixekizumab, risankizumab, and then lower options for apremilast and deucravacitinib. So I would say that for this patient with skin-limited disease, skin-only disease, who have moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, I will present the data a little bit later on, but overall, we are looking at IL-17 or IL-23 classes as they have very high skin efficacy, but certainly are depending on patient's preference for oral versus injectables, we can think about the oral options. Adalimumab is the highest choice here, but we do have a number of head-to-head studies now showing that we have superiority of some of our other classes over TNF class now in the skin. Okay, first of all, I want to apologize that this is not a diagram of a joint. So this is skin pathophysiology in terms of psoriasis. And what you'll notice is that when we think of our TNF therapies, it is present in multiple different locations in the lesional skin, in the blood, and it's considered one of the workhorses when it was first introduced. Then we're talking about our IL-12/23 inhibitor or IL-23 inhibitor, very important in terms of limiting the Th17 population in the psoriasis pathogenesis. And then we have our IL-17 inhibitors in the skin, in the lesional skin, as well as in the blood. We have increased levels of IL-17, and therefore the anti-IL-17 therapies are highly effective. So as you can see, many of these therapeutic categories are shared. Now, let's think about choosing a biologic. So when we think about patients with psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, TNF inhibitors, these are my thoughts, by the way, TNF inhibitors are great in both psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, but probably, in my opinion, greatest in psoriatic arthritis. It's efficacy in psoriasis, relatively speaking, is more modest compared to IL-17 and IL-23 classes. We want to avoid TNF inhibitors in those with demyelinating disease or hepatitis B. And then it's not preferred in those with a history of latent TB or potentially advanced CHF. What about our IL-17 inhibitors? IL-17 inhibitors as a class have robust efficacy in both the skin as well as the joints. And when we think about the joints, it helps with the different domains in terms of both peripheral psoriatic arthritis as well as axial disease. And as Dr. Ogdi has said, you know, you want to avoid IL-17 inhibitors in those with a personal history of inflammatory bowel disease, or not use therapies that are not indicated in that population, not indicated for IBD. And then other consideration is that there are low rates of oral candidiasis, especially with some of our newer IL-17 inhibitors, where it has great efficacy in the skin, but carry now a greater risk of oral candidiasis. And then for our IL-23 inhibitors, overall as a class, there's a little bit more heterogeneity in the performance of the different IL-23 inhibitors. Guselkumab and risankizumab has very robust skin efficacy. A number of them are also approved for psoriatic arthritis, guselkumab, risankizumab, and ustekinumab. And one of the key advantages in terms of our IL-23 inhibitors is that they do have fewer injections, that our patients only need to take them either once every 2 months or once every 3 months. So they really like that option when I discuss that with them. In terms of axial disease, I think the evidence is evolving. And as was shown in the guidelines talk by Dr. Ogdi, that IL-23 inhibitors have not been incorporated in the treatment of axial disease in some of the guidelines. Okay, so since this is a hot topic, so I wanted to make sure that I include our newest FDA-approved biologic, which is bimekizumab. Bimekizumab differs from other IL-17 inhibitors in that it inhibits both IL-17A as well as IL-17F. And interestingly, IL-17F is actually expressed in higher amounts in the skin than IL-17A. And it is it's not bispecific. It inhibits both of these ligands by taking advantage of their similarity. So you can think about IL-17A and F as siblings. They have 50% homology. So bimekizumab takes advantage of that 50% homology, and it binds to a place where both IL-17A and IL-17F shares. So how well does it do? It has very, very high efficacy, likely the highest that we've seen so far in psoriasis. So, you know, we talk about ACR20, for example, as the main primary endpoint. In skin now, we're talking about PASI 100, so complete clearance in patients who start out with moderate to severe disease. And by week 16, 2 out of 3 patients on bimekizumab will be completely clear. So this level of efficacy we haven't really seen before in the prior biologics, and it really sets the new standard in terms of clearance for skin. And it's very fast onset. Patients are able to see improvement within just 2 weeks of injection. Okay, so this one is a long-term comparative efficacy of biologics for moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. So if you wonder how do the biologics for psoriasis shakes out in terms of efficacy, there are a number of different meta-analyses that have been published. This one looks at the whole year. So this is looks at the first year of data and looks at the cumulative benefit. This one at the time was published. It did not include bimekizumab, but that newer publication, it's in press right now. But as you can see, it often doesn't matter which network meta-analysis that you read. The top 4 always comes out to be around this area. So ixekizumab, brodalumab, risankizumab, and guselkumab in the skin, they work very, very well. And sometimes you may get a question like, which one is better? Is it ixekizumab or risankizumab? And there's no head-to-head data. And when your patient asks that, you say, yes. So, and you will be right, because oftentimes their confidence intervals overlap. I think when bimekizumab in the latest one that's, you know, that will be published hopefully in the coming months, I think bimekizumab will rank also definitely among the top. The debate is oftentimes what is at the very top, but, you know, given the data we have, oftentimes the confidence intervals may overlap. But the key thing is that we have very good medications, biologics for our patients. Okay. So, overall, when you're just looking at skin disease alone, IL-17 inhibitors or IL-23 inhibitors are generally preferred over TNF inhibitors. We have a number of head-to-head trials, most of them against adalimumab, of IL-17 inhibitors against IL-23 inhibitors against adalimumab. So if you have a patient with mostly moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, then that's an area, that's where the field's acknowledgement is. Okay. What about if you have a patient with a moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, but they have peripheral psoriatic arthritis? That's probably the most likely case that you're going to encounter. And when we think about that, I think about the ability of our biologics to inhibit radiographic progression. As you know, that this is showing modified total sharp score, and the placebo showing here progression over time, and then here is secukinumab showing that at least during the short term that there's overall no progression in the vast majority of our patients. And we see that with our other IL-17 inhibitors as well. Here's placebo showing slight progression, and the orange being ixekizumab, and the other ones representing adalimumab here showing no worsening of radiographic progression. What about bimekizumab? So we have data on bimekizumab, not yet approved for psoriatic arthritis, but certainly from the clinical trials, they have also shown overall radiographic progression was minimal during the first 16 weeks. So, as a result of that, so if you have a patient with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis and someone with peripheral psoriatic arthritis, in general, the current data shows that IL-17 inhibitors have stronger data with regards to prevention or retardation of the radiographic progression compared to IL-23 inhibitors. All right, what to do if you have a patient with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis and axial psoriatic arthritis? Now, there is a clinical trial actually looking at this particular question, and this clinical trial was comparing secukinumab versus placebo with regards to treating axial disease axial psoriatic arthritis, or that particular domain, to evaluate their efficacy. And so here is the ASAS 20 response. And so what they found was that secukinumab achieved, as you can see, ASAS 20, here's multiple imputation or as observed, either way is more efficacious than placebo in terms of achieving ASAS 20 in those with axial disease. So because of that, in general, at this time, IL-17 inhibitors have stronger data in terms of treatment of axial PSA compared to our IL-23 inhibitors. And that's why in the guidelines, you see that for patients with mostly axial disease, the IL-17 inhibitors are preferred. Now, TNF inhibitors can also be considered. In this case, if you have a patient with moderate to severe psoriasis, because IL-17 efficacy is better in the skin, that's why in those categories of patients, IL-17 inhibitors are preferred when you're combining the skin versus the joint data. Okay, what about dose escalation, right? What if the approved dose does not work for our patients? And I know that for most of the dosing strategy, you'll notice the skin dosing, psoriasis dosing, is either equivalent to that for PSA or a little bit stronger or a little bit more. And then in most cases, you'll see that if the dermatologist is going to tweak the dosing a little bit of the same medication, what we do is that we will typically shorten the duration between the injections as opposed to increase the amount of drug per injection. This allows for a little bit even distribution of the medication from a pharmacokinetic perspective. And so in those who are primary failures, we typically would wait at least 6 months before we consider any switching. And then we would consider switching to another biologic if they haven't responded at all after 6 months. However, I would say these days, because the medication for psoriasis, the biologics are so good, oftentimes I would question the diagnosis. Is it really psoriasis that we're treating if you are treating them with one of the highly efficacious biologics and they're not budging? Perhaps you're inadvertently treating CTCL or some other condition. So I oftentimes tell my colleagues to make sure that you may want to biopsy the skin to make sure it's actually psoriasis that you're treating. Secondary failure are those who have maintained a good response, but then dropped off in terms of the response. Then here your choices are more. Perhaps you want to dose escalate. You may want to switch within the class. For example, one IL-17 to another IL-17, especially if they have psoriatic arthritis. And then you can, of course, consider cross-class switching. Okay. In the remaining 5 minutes, I'm going to talk briefly about oral versus biologic. I will tell you about my personal perspective. I think, first of all, there are definite efficacy differences, at least at the current time, in skin between oral medications and biologic medications. Overall, as an oral, if we generalize of all the oral medications, overall the efficacy is more modest compared to the biologics. There are safety differences. So when I talk to my patients, I kind of highlight these first before we consider, we talk about the route of administration. If you talk to the patients, they oftentimes all prefer oral. If you just say, do you want a pill or a shot? If they haven't experienced either, they'll probably say pill because that's all they've experienced. But I do highlight these key differences in the beginning and before I kind of talk about the preferences. There are very few people who are so needle-phobic. So I think it's very important to take all these into consideration. All right, let's take a look at polling question number 2. Which of the following oral medication is FDA approved for all severities of psoriasis? All right, we see live polling results changing percentages. All right. So the majority of you chose apremilast, and that would be correct. So when we think about all the systemic therapies currently approved for moderate to severe psoriasis, that everything I talked about, apremilast is actually the only one that's also approved for all severities of psoriasis currently. So apremilast used as one of the key oral therapies for psoriasis. If you have a patient who have a little bit of psoriasis and you think they're a systemic candidate, you can use apremilast. Okay. Deucravacitinib, this is another hot area. It has been approved for over a year now in skin. And what we know, this is a TYK2 inhibitor. And then for deucravacitinib, there's actually head-to-head data in psoriasis against apremilast. So what we see is that deucravacitinib outperforms apremilast in the skin. You can look at a number of different endpoints, but overall, deucravacitinib is superior to apremilast with regards to the treatment of patients with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Now, you have tofacitinib and upadacitinib approved also for treatment of psoriatic arthritis. And just for completeness sake, one of the things that's also shown with oral therapies, for example, upadacitinib has also shown here with no progression in terms of radiographic damage with upadacitinib. So the key takeaways in my remaining minute and a half is that when we look at TNF inhibitors, they are still great in peripheral and axial psoriatic arthritis. Their efficacy is more modest now compared to our IL-17 and IL-23 medications as a class as a whole. For our IL-17 inhibitors, great in skin, great in the joints, and in the joints both works well for for peripheral and axial disease. For IL-23 inhibitors, fewer injections for patients, great skin efficacy overall. For the peripheral arthritis, we also have efficacy data showing that it works. Probably there's some emerging evidence needed in terms of their efficacy for axial disease. Few other takeaways, radiographic progression, IL-17 inhibitors overall reigns over IL-23 inhibitors, in my opinion. TNF inhibitors also very helpful in this regard. And then for our patients with axial PSA, we talked about IL-17 and TNF inhibitors work very well. And for oral therapies, while, you know, we talk about JAK inhibitors here, JAK1 inhibitors, for psoriasis, the conversation is really centered around TYK2 inhibition. And with that, I know this has been a talk about hot therapies, and I'll cool you down with a picture of my family on the ski slopes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this reprise session from Room Now Live 2024. This session and these recordings were sponsored by AbbVie, UCB, and Amgen. Be sure to register for Room Now Live 2025 when you can have full access to all the videos, all the recordings, all the downloads, and all the board questions that come out of Room Now Live 2025.